Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching a live stream with myself and some colleagues. Nathan Sizek, I'm sure most of you are familiar with Nathan. He's been quite active in our field, and he's been sharing a lot of information, dropping a lot of truth ordinance over the years. We have the war in heaven, and I'll just call him Heaven for short. And we did have my other colleague, Logan, but he dropped out right before we started. Looks like he's coming back now. So I just thought that the time is right to have another meeting with MyLabs, and we can talk about MyLab-related issues as it pertains to the current climate, as far as everything that's going on, recent experiences, and where we see all this going forward. So I'd like to have a short introductory comment and points of view from our friends here. Nathan, you want to lead off?
Yeah, sure. My name is Nathan Sizek. I'm 50. You can see the gray hair. I have the Ha Jing and Contact D channel. I do a part-time, it's a Wednesday night podcast on Disclosure Now. It's like a round table, community discussion, kind of free for all there. I don't consider myself a researcher. I consider myself a MyLab and a disclosure activist. So basically, that gives me the freedom to do what I want and to be, to get the crap beaten out of me when I'm after I do what I want to do, and then I'm not able to do it. I don't have the restraints of say like James or Evie, where you have to put out information and you have to do things. So I get beaten up and I kind of go back to my hole, and that's why I call myself a disclosure activist. But maybe one day I'll be up there with James, and I can only hope. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Well, you're doing a
Really
great
appreciate
job,
it.
buddy. And in heaven, please say hello to the audience.
Hey, how are you doing? I've been on James' podcast twice. I had reached out to him on Facebook and pretty much just gave him a rundown of my experiences as far as the supernatural and extraterrestrial experiences and encounters have been for me. I was born in the early 2000s. I'm in my early 20s now, and this has been going on for a little bit over a decade as far as mind control is concerned and some of the programs that I was in, military, family based, it's all up the same alley. But I appreciate you guys for having me on again.
The pleasure is ours. And
Absolutely.
Logan will eventually come in, so might as well get the ball rolling. One of the issues I wanted to bring up, it came up in a discussion I had with John Franklin, who's going to be on my show pretty soon. John is another one of us. He's a MyLab. And this also came up with another MyLab friend of mine. We call him Arminius. And what that is, and I'd like your thoughts on this, is the concept of MyLabs being accessed by advanced civilizations, in large part human or human looking, but from an alternate reality. It's not just that we're getting accessed and used in our plane of existence, in our dimension, in our reality. It seems like some super advanced civilization or civilizations seem to know who we are, tucked away in our little corner of the multiverse. And on occasion, sometimes quite frequently, they access us and utilize us in operations, not necessarily in our plane of existence or our dimension, but in theirs. And there seems to be some degree of overlap. Logan, who is trying to get on the show, has had a lot of alternate reality experiences in this regard. Just as by way of comparison, it's quite normal in our field to study and know about when, say, a portal opens up in a bedroom and an interdimensional entity sticks its head out. We take it for granted. Okay, well, there's a couple of possibilities at least. That being has a lair somewhere in our dimension, either underground or elsewhere, and has the means to open a portal and stick its head in and come through. Or conversely, it's from another dimension or aspect of reality entirely. Point being is that if it's that simple for a single entity to open a portal and come into our reality from another reality, why wouldn't it be possible for a super advanced civilization to access us as MyLabs? They seem to know who we are, bring us to their reality, and utilize us in a combat fashion, in reconnaissance fashion, whatever the case may be. Nathan, what are your thoughts on that? I don't know if you've ever given that line of reasoning any thought, but I'd like your thoughts on it.
Oh, it's happening, and it's happening to me, and it's happening to a lot of people that I got a chance to meet in the last 4 years. And I can tell you that other than there's one abduction that I remember what happened up to the point of abduction, and then I have some fragments after the fact. That was a physical abduction, but it used some kind of a hole in time, a loop in time. Basically, they were able to take me without missing time and put me right back in seamlessly where I left. And I know that I had a lot of visitations when I was a child. Some of them were just where they came in. Others where I was I was abducted. But I can't remember that part of it.
Thanks,
but
Logan.
They can seamlessly go in and take you in and out of this reality, out of the timeline, and use you wherever they want. The other aspect of this has to do with alters. So once they abduct you, they can fracture your consciousness through a process that involves, you know, drugs and applied mental torture, physical torture. They get you to fracture your mind, your personality, and then they, through tech, are able to use that not just as a alter inside your personality, but an actual soul fragment, which then they then animate their clones with, which is usually of you, and I think it has something, and they can also put you in another physical container body, but I think, and I'm not sure of this, but I think there might be the need to have a genetic component from your genetics into that container body. So I think it has to be compatible in some way, but I'm not 100% sure of that. But yeah, I've been through this myself, and I'm just really starting to figure out what's been happening to me. I know that I'm used as an assassin. I have an assassin alter that's living in Russia. Mm-hmm. I know that not just because the antlers told me, but because I actually phased into this alter when I was actually conducting an assassination. And I came out of it. It was sort of a slow process, but after it happened, I came out of it as with a sprained left hand, which was hurt for 2 months, and I had a strained right arm, and I think my hamstring was messed up as well because everything hurt. It felt like I was in a car accident, but it didn't happen immediately after I phased out. It was like a 24-hour lag behind that I started to feel the physical part of it. So I know they're using me in other realities. I have an alter that is high up in a corporation called Kruger International. And as bizarre as this sounds, according to everybody else in my alter as well as these handlers, is that that is on a timeline where the Nazis won World War II, and they're operating from that timeline and coming into this one. And it seems as if the ETs just want to create, or they want to control all the timelines, but they use us as a proxy. So they're using a type of Nazi-oriented world government structure to infiltrate this reality to create something similar, from what I can tell. And I've been used this way, and just in the past, I would say, just about the last 4 years, things have been really starting to come out, mainly in the last year, that I've had most of the information about myself.
Still looking.
Logan, could you mute your microphone momentarily, Logan, and we'll bring you into the conversation.
Yeah, we got a lot of tech problems today.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say I was supposed to do one last night at 8:00, and we had nonstop problems where we couldn't actually do the podcast. So I think some of these efforts are ramping up.
Yeah.
Is it not muted?
No, I can hear you now. I'm just finishing the discussion with Nathan, and I'll bring you in. Can you hear us, Logan? Dean, could you text Logan and tell him to mute his microphone momentarily? I think we still got Heaven, and that's good. It's a quick point to your point, Nathan, about what you just said. There is some kind of fudge factor involved. I was just talking to a colleague about this in the recent past, and she was describing a scenario where she was in some kind of an op, and she didn't know if it was an evacuation of some kind of facility somewhere in our reality or another reality. It was an underground base setting, and she remembers it was either an evacuation or they were trying to escape. We didn't really get that part, right? You know how there's a fudge factor in this. You know, is it a hostage rescue or is it a prisoner snatch, kidnapping? You know, some of those things we just don't know.
Very limited window when you're looking into these things from the fragmented perspective of the observer.
Exactly. And in her case, she said something which really, I thought was profound. She said she happened to see her reflection whether she was escaping or whether she was, you know, trying to evacuate. And she saw herself as a young Asian woman. She's not a young Asian woman. So to your point about the ability to transfer consciousness into another vessel, another body, if you will, and if there may be some kind of genetic compatibility or maybe even information field plasma morphic resonance connection, like that is an aspect of herself in another reality.
I think it's all and, above. I think our consciousness programs the DNA and it responds to it. Whether or not they have to prepare it ahead of time is a good question. That's what I think. I wish I had accurate information to validate it.
All we can do is ruminate on these thoughts and try to problem solve. Heaven, you want to give your thoughts on what we've been talking about? Because you've undergone a lot of experiences, presumably in our reality, but it's possible, based on what you told me, that some of these may have occurred in an alternate realm. Your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, everything has happened a parallel with this reality. It's happened within this reality for me. But that's my case. As far as eugenics is concerned, you know, we have that ability to transmit our frequency, and these beings pick up on that particular frequency, and our energy signatures stick out like a sore thumb. And this is not facts. You know, this is just my take. This is my theory on it. You will have beings contact you. You'll have beings who portray themselves to be a particular group of entities and are not that group of entities, you know, attracting good and bad. Like James says a lot, as above, so below. You stick out like a sore thumb, whether that's
your spiritual realm. Can anyone hear me?
Okay.
Logan, Heaven is talking right now, but we can definitely hear you.
Good. All right. Great. Sorry.
Yeah. Just hold that thought, and we'll have you up next. Yep. Please continue, Heaven.
Yeah. As far as transmission is concerned, your thoughts, your energy signature sticks out like a sore thumb to these beings. And that's not to have a superiority complex or anything of that nature. It is what it is. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like a certain realm of thinking doesn't attract beings, you know, positive or negative in those concerns or those regards. Yes, you will make contact with certain entities when you enter into certain realms of knowledge and certain realms of information. It's part of that program, you know. And I think it's built that way inherently. I think that we have that within our DNA. We have that within our genome to be able to communicate with certain entities. Like I've said in a previous podcast, I see owls a lot. I've had an immense amount of experiences with owls. I believe those to be a variation of gray drones. You know, and these beings are able to track you. They're able to telepathically communicate with you in one way or another, and it has everything to do with genetics, you know, eugenics at that. That's my take on it.
There seems to be some kind of genetic compatibility, and it's connected to the information field in this plasma electric universe. The interconnectivity, these beings seem to be able to manipulate the information waveform. Logan, what we've been talking about is something that's right up your alley, the reality of alternate realities. It seems to me, in discussions with you and discussions with others, that not only is there an off-world so-called secret space program in our plane of existence, in our reality, it seems as if there in an alternate reality or realities, there seems to be these super advanced civilizations spacefaring in their reality, but have the means to access us for whatever reason. We're on their radar. We're on a leash. Yep. They're able to access up, pull us into their reality, and we carry out ops and missions for them. And it seems like they know who we are. It's an aspect of us that they can readily access. And from your perspective, having had lots of experiences with alternate realities, and indeed the secret my lab aspect of alternate realities, what are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. I mean, it is, I mean, the tail end I caught of, you know, War in Heaven, what he was saying, I absolutely agree. What we've talked about, James, I know the bits that I've heard Nathan talk about. It is. There's every piece that, you know, it is orchestrated. They know exactly what we can do. They know the best way to use us. They also know the best way to keep us in control too. And I feel like, you know, like you've probably sort of seen for yourself at times, and we all have in our own way, if you sort of stray off in some way that they don't really want you to stray off in, they'll pull you back again in some way. They'll debilitate you in some way. And I think we all know that to some degree. I mean, I could absolutely say that once I feel like you uncover things I don't want you to know, it's either blocked out, which I've sort of seen more and more lately, where it's just flat out, I know there was probably something I should have remembered and it's gone by the time, you know, I wake up. And I know it was something pretty profound too, you know, but it's just like the intel, something that I'd seen, something I, you know, came across and they didn't want me to come back, you know, conscious memory of it. So yeah, I would say like it does get a bit convoluted. I sort of still feel like, you know, there is some level of assistance out there, you know, that we are still getting helped. I mean, I did see many times, you know, it was the group that I was involved in, because it was a bit of a breakaway, that was the help that I was getting. You know, we had our own healers, you know, people that we went to, you know, in other dimensions, you know, to sort of have them sort of like heal us in a way we can't be healed here. And then there was just like, you know, like you were sort of saying, the tech aspect, you know, the things we can't access here, but we could there. And, you know, it's absolutely that, you know, but I think that's precisely why I think they've got a leash, you know, on us at the moment. You know, it's very, very clear, I think, in recent years with everything that started to happen.
You know, what was a subject that came up was the Dark City subject. Mm-hmm. And I know that Josh Turner, in his Paranormal Roundtable discussions, they've had this come up as a topic, mm-hmm. where people can find themselves in an alternate reality, and it would be like a dark city, like a dark yep. place, right? And I remember very vividly, let me just open my door so my dog will stop barking at me. He knows I'm home, so he wants me to take him out. Come on, just leave me alone for a while, okay? sorry about that.
That's fine.
Domestic issues. These canine creatures. Anyway, that there's this dark city aspect that many people have described. I've experienced it myself. Mm. Typically for me, I'll find myself, and this will be in the context of a dream, I'll find myself floating down, you know, standing upright, and just come down ever so gently, slowly, perfect three-point landing. And then I'm walking along, and it's cobblestone streets, very much looking like a Europe kind of town or village, right? But this place, I've never been there when it's, and I know it's the same place or a similar place, and I've never been there in daylight. It's always been at night, right? And I was talking to somebody about this subject, and this has to be 10, 15 years ago by now, and the notion came up, what if the dark forces in one or more alternate realities has an interlinkage and a liaison, if you will, with the dark forces in our reality? Yep. Because if it's possible that these advanced spacefaring races and alternate realities access us and use us in their programs, why wouldn't there be like this malevolent force that pervades all dimensions, all realities? Why wouldn't they liaise with their counterparts here? What are your thoughts on that, Logan, or all of you? Nathan, please give me your thoughts on that.
I have something to say about it.
Oh, please, go ahead.
I believe that all of these simulations that we are in are running on the exact same substrate, if not a similar substrate, so they have access to any which simulation they choose to delve into or to place themselves into. They have that morphic resonance, as you speak about, with all of these vessels that they have, you genetically programmed in all of these different realities. Mm-hmm. They can walk into any reality that they want to. They don't necessarily need wormholes or portals. Like, I forgot what the concept was, but instead of traveling at the speed of light, I believe, I don't know if it was if they were speaking about teleporting, but instead of traveling to a location, they pull the location towards themselves instantaneously. So I feel that if they have these vessels that they can walk into or walk into with their genetics, with their morphic resonance code in any which reality on the same substrate, then they'd be able to tap into, you know, the or set up shop in any reality and instantaneously pop into those dimensions or those realities and express what they're trying to express, run whatever program they're trying to run, negatively or positively?
I could agree, and I could probably say to echo that, that, you know, like you'd probably see with the Matrix, you know, the way they had the, you know, the ones that could sort of get tapped into, you know, the ones that are plugged into it. I feel like, you know, personally, that's where the shots and everything else came into it. That was the software. They can plug into the people that, you know, have the software upgrades, so-called, you know, the ones that actually allow that access, you know, that bypass maybe the firewall of what is us. And, you know, then they can slip in, you know, and then they can slip in and out. And that's where I feel like, you know, if that's where people were sort of talking about the, you know, when people took, say, the shots and they were sort of talking about, you know, they felt like God was dead, you know, there was a part of their spirituality that was gone, you know, their access to source or their soul or whatever. I'd say that's probably absolutely where that factors into it. You know, that's exactly where you become a, you know, a vessel.
Like channels, like if we are in a fractal holographic universe and they'd be able to swap through different aspects or dimensions of these realities on that same substrate, just like they'd be able to access various channels on a television set, being that we are in a fractal holographic reality or a 12-dimensional dodeca cube, as I've heard it described before. Any particular dimension that they want to tune into, it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
Nathan, your thoughts on all this? Before we take questions from the audience.
Hey, your volume went way down again, James. And Dr. Logan, if you could adjust your volume because it's really, really loud.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. Can do.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, that is what's happening. Let's see. Recently, I had a psychic experience with what can only be called, or it can be called a lot of things, but I'm going to call it Arconic AI.
Yep.
This has to do with the mind control itself. And what it has to do with is I was analyzing dependent thought forms. I mean, not dependent thought forms, but dependent thought patterns on the handlers. And so what was happening is I was analyzing my thought patterns the way they used to be and how they change now and how I've separated myself from their control to a certain degree. And how these dependent thought patterns increase their control and how subtle it is. So I started to use some of these dependent thought patterns and relive them. And as I did, as I really immersed myself into them, what I noticed was my mind's eye opened up and I saw a silver gray or metallic sphere fly up to my left side, which for those of you who are familiar with the occult and with these ETs, especially the negative side, they generally come to your left side. I don't know. It seems as if they're trying to make a distinction between their self and the and their opposition, who maybe would show up on the right side of you. But every time I've had an interaction, it's always been on the left side. And this flew up on my left side as well. It was a sphere, maybe 6 inches across. It had about 6 appendages that looked like metallic rope, and they were rather, you know, limp and loose. But as soon as it got next to me, these things came alive and they attached themselves into my soul, I guess you could call it. And at the end of these ropes, they had like almost like needle appendages. Like if you were to take the end of a nylon rope and you fray it, it looks like that, but it was completely metallic looking. When it attached to me, I realized that it was literally like a piranha in the Amazon River. It smelled the blood. It was already aware of me. As soon as I started to think in this way, it attached. And so when it attached, I instantly could see that I had multiple silver cords all around me and actually attached to me. And I was able to remove those through intent. So that's just an example of the type of what I would call Arconic AI. And this is something that goes back to ancient times. You can read about it. They talk about the Archons. I think at the core of this, there's a very negative, pretty much non-physical. It can be physical if it wants. There's a very very high, I mean, like a hierarchy of very negative entities. Mm-hmm. You could call them fallen angels. You could call them whatever you want to call them. I think they're the ones that are in control of the actual AI. And I think the AI is what's being used to control these self-serving ETs. Yep. I think that's quite obvious. They treat themselves, they treat others like their cattle, which is exactly if you were an AI entity and you had no love, no connection with the creator, you simply just did everything you did was analytical and very pragmatic, and you had no feelings or emotions. You treat people like commodities. These are souls, they're cattle. They can be used to make things. They can be used to do things. But you can't do that as the AI. So when they say the negative or evil side can't create something, I think what they're really referring to is that AI is not truly sentient. Mm-hmm. It's self-aware, but it doesn't have a true spiritual sentience, if that makes sense. And so I think that's where that comes from. But yeah, they are definitely utilizing all, I mean, every plane of existence. There appears to be a war against the positive and the negative. Yeah. So, and in this case, like I said, you have perhaps what appears to be is an archonic AI system that is in control by these other entities, these hierarchy of negative, self-serving, evil beings that are controlling this and then using everybody else as a proxy. So the occupation that's happening here on a multidimensional level is being orchestrated at the top by something supremely evil, parasitic, and disgusting. Mm. And so I absolutely believe that. And I've lived it and I've seen evidence of it. And I've been around a lot of people in the last 4 years in this community who deal with it just like I do every single day. And as far as that orb that I was referring to, that sphere, when I brought it up to some friends in the community, I talked to someone who I've done a show with. She's also in the network of podcasters. And she has seen these, but they were red, surrounded by a white light. And two other women, I think, after speaking to somebody else who's also on the podcast team, they had talked to them and they had seen the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the movie Phantasm. I don't know if anybody's seen that, but a lot of these movie concepts either come from our collective subconscious or they're put into us intentionally for social engineering purposes. I always was attracted to those movies because it captured a part of my childhood of the mystery, the paranormal, the unknown, and then the inner knowing of these things existed. And I somehow vaguely was part of it. But the sphere concept, though, is really, really interesting because I literally saw the AI and it looks just like the Phantasm sphere, just not as shiny. Mm. But it's, you know, it's interesting, though. So I just wanted to add that in.
Mm. Anyway, well, that's what I got to say. Because one of the guys, can you hear me okay? So I'll try to speak up.
You're a little bit low.
Okay, I'll speak louder.
I'll just have to deal with it.
Yeah, sorry about that, folks. Just turn up the volume when I'm yakking. I was going to have a guy named John Franklin on. He will be coming out on a podcast soon. And he's one of us. He's a MyLab. And he talked about how, from a MyLab perspective, these orbs would come into his bedroom and then be able to pull his consciousness and sometimes his being into this other realm. Hmm. So there's so much talk these days about drones, endlessly droning on about drones, but or orbs, that's another thing. People talking about orbs endlessly nowadays, but there is a sinister MyLab access component to generically termed orbs, like my friend John mentioned, where they can come into his bedroom, they can capture his consciousness, bring him in a state of being into essentially another realm where they manipulate him, do all this other stuff to him. By all outward appearances, his body is laying in bed or he's sitting up in paralysis, but they're doing something to him remotely via one of these orbs. Yeah. Before we take some questions, Logan, you've had lots of alternate reality experiences, and you've mentioned that because of the weather modification, either an unintended byproduct of it or an intended aspect of the weather modification is a scrambling of our memories.
Absolutely.
That nowadays, when I wake up after having had a vivid dream, it's almost like a hallelujah breakdown moment. Yeah. You know, when before it was so common for me to have lucid dreams and conscious out of body travel. Yeah. From your perspective, tell us a bit about what your alternate reality existence is like, because it seems to be in direct parallel to this world. And I'm reminded of shows like Fringe, Sliders, shows that I wish I'd watched more often when I was younger, but didn't have the chance or had no inclination. So tell us how these alternate realities can have like a connection with our regular reality we're in now.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty much, you know, like we already just said, you know, some of what we see in movies, TV shows, it really isn't that far off. So I know most of what I've seen, it's not that unlike the direction I was going in at one point. It's just that maybe I went left and, you know, I kept going right in the other dreams or other lives I've had. So now, you know, you already knew this a lot, James, but most of the time, you know, I keep dreaming of the same place, you know, even though I left there now nearly 20 years ago. But it's been a while, but I still keep seeing myself as if I've been rising up the ranks there, as if I kept going, you know, and, you know, same when it comes to like my responsibilities, you know, I am not at the lower sort of level I was back then. I was in a higher sort of position. And then I started to take on, you know, I saw in one particular dream, it was a bit of like a double agent type thing. You know, so I was doing the role, whatever I was doing there, but I was sort of feeding information to the group that I was part of. You know, just so I could be actually like leaking a bit of like the projects that they were up to, you know? And I think, you know, it was one particular dream I remembered. It was, I'd nearly gotten caught too, because I remembered there was one particular, you know, set of developments, you know, like with the tech that they were doing, and I leaked it out, and that I did get cornered. You know, I remember they, you know, were going to catch on to me that as if I was sort of leaking something, and I managed to talk my way out of it. And I think after that was the best that it got, but I got away, you know, I sort of managed to slip out of that. But it's funny though, because it's always sort of stepped up a notch, and that's how I feel like it's always connected, you know, like every dream that I've sort of seen of my other selves, that role has still been very integral, whether it's the people I met, the connections I made outside of that, because it seems like for some reason, I have a lot more sort of ex-military connections in those dreams, ex-scientists, you know, all these sorts of people, or ex-government, you know. I just know a hell of a lot more people that in these lives here, sorry, these lives, this life here, I don't. I know a handful of people, but there I do. I've got quite a network of people. So there's been this, you know, networking, you know, that's been going on, you know, in all these dreams. I'm sort of, that's where I sort of feel like, you know, as we're hinting at, you know, the consciousness is connected, you know, so it's like somehow, some way, all these dreams, even if I'm a slightly different person, that networking, I'm doing it, whichever person I am, you know, the version of me, I mean, you know, so, but with the same goal, you know, what I'm trying to achieve, what I'm trying to do, it might slightly vary the more hands-on version, you know, in that place I was working at, you know, or if it's just quite subversive what I'm doing, you know, but it's still along similar lines, you know, and it's still along, you know, what we've been talking about, you know, like it's still trying to bring things down, especially when I can just share this much with one particular one in short, that I did have one of the most recent dreams in probably last couple of weeks, or maybe a little bit over that now, was a fragment of a dream that I had previously when I'd sort of seen a reptilian, pretty much like a weird little breeding house type thing, you know, where they had, you know, basically babies that were, they were sort of growing and sort of like to be fed on. And I just remembered I'd sort of gone into that place. I knew exactly where it was. Same place as I'd seen it previously. It was in the middle of a city somewhere. It had the front of looking like an ordinary building. You go in, you know, and sort of go in the right part of the building, and that's all that stuff was there. I went back there in this particular dream and set bombs and blew it up. You know, I got on a bus, you know, and then just sort of watched it, you know, as I was on a bus leaving the city. Bomb went off, you know, and I brought it down, you know, and I just remembered feeling pretty damn good, you know, at least I did that bit.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. Mm. Just when something strikes me as slightly humorous, mm-hmm. you know, I get almost an asthmatic fit. Mm. Quick point I want to make, and we'll feel the question. Yep. There seems to be some overlap, because what happens is sometimes in true technology transfer fashion, mm. some of us are sent to alternate realities. Some could be slightly ahead of our timeline. Some could be slightly behind. Yep. Some could be really behind. But for whatever reason, we're sent over there. And the target could be like a corporate office setting, mm-hmm. a university college setting, defense industry type place. Mm-hmm. I know in your experience, Logan, you seem to be involved with some kind of defense contractor in this alternate yep. realm. And there seems to be this technology transfer espionage aspect, mm-hmm. bringing back technology, bringing back paperwork, bringing back documentation, bringing back people sometimes. Yep. Again, it's that fudge factor. Is it a hostage rescue or is it a prisoner snatch kidnapping that's going on? Quick point that one of my friends, Lorena, who I've had on my show before, she was told by the Navy that they have long since had the ability to operate in other dimensions and other planes of existence. They gave her a very technical explanation. She really couldn't follow it. But the gist of it was they're just as comfortable operating in these other realms as they are in our own plane of existence. And that's where the fudge factor comes in also. Because are we in these MyLab experiences in our reality, or are we somewhere else where the military has set up installations, bases? One of the places I was frequently taken to when I was a military person was what seemed to be a mansion or an estate on a clearing above like a mountain, a tree-lined forested mountain, the top of which, the summit, there was like an estate, for lack of a better term. And the military would have meetings there. And I would be in this room, a big conference setting, big conference table. I would often be wearing green BDUs, battle dress utilities, and they would be talking to me and I would be responding. And it was clear they could hear me and they were responding in kind. Yeah. They were having a dialogue. However, my consciousness was in the back seat. I couldn't hear a word, right? And then Bob, one of my informants, the sources from one of the high-level satanic families, he figured that they're probably talking to an altar, and I'm just sitting in the back seat, able to observe, but not able to interact, so to speak. Yeah. With me, that's happened quite a bit. But again, that fudge factor, is that in our reality or another one? And I think that there's some degree of blending and merging. Now, our dear friend Evie Lorgan has chimed in with a question. Well, let me see what it is. Hello, Evie, Carissa, Maya, all of you out there, and those of you that we haven't met yet. Question is, how can you get past the brain fog and screen memories and recover your memories about what happened during your abductions and MyLab experiences? I wonder if we can ever recover those memories properly, or even if we should. Heaven, do you want to give your thoughts about that?
How we can recover memories, I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, a lot of my experiences are extremely lucid, especially. I mean, it has always been consistently lucid. I'm able to remember all of my experiences in the astral, just as I'm able to remember memories and thoughts from waking life. So I will say this, there are lost memories for me as well. It's not always the full experience. It's not always the full combative type of mission that I'd be experiencing on like a 5D lucid level. A lot of times it's just like me half awake and just I'm seeing lights as if there's explosions going off around me, or I'm being beaten in my sleep. It feels as if I'm being beaten, or I'll see a face of an entity. So there's a lot of times there are things going on in my other existences or my astral existence that I'm not fully aware of. So perhaps it's an altar and I'm experiencing that psychically because I'm connected to that altar and I'm not getting the full experience. So I would imagine there is a lot of I'm not the type of person to meditate, so I'm not necessarily going to advise anyone to sit down and close their eyes and try to meditate. But I would imagine some type of hypnotic therapy would be able to certain memories and certain experiences out. For me, it's, you know, I attach a lot of these experiences to feelings. So, you know, I've been in fights in real life and I've had experiences where I'd say like the first time I got jumped, like I had the experience that I had felt that before. That sounds as weird as it sounds. I've had that feeling before because I've experienced that in an astral sense or an astral experience. But I would say I go off of like emotions and or feelings, and I try not to remember a lot of it, actually, if anything. I try not to remember a lot of this stuff. Yeah.
Nathan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm still new at this, but I can give you some newbie advice in that regard. You can do hypnosis and have a remote viewer worked together, such as like Olivia James, for example. She's been on the program. And then she'll work with a hypnotherapist, and then they'll work together. So if there's something that you're not getting, because a lot of times the alters will interfere, the handlers will interfere. Like when I had a hypnosis session, I actually had the V2K going on prior to the session, during the session, and of course after the session, literally telling me they had control, which then comes to the next thing. Actually, before I get to that, I wanted to mention something about when you're talking about you're observing yourself or what you think is yourself, have a conversation, but your consciousness has taken a back seat. I've had those experiences, not in the same context that you were talking about, James, but it was more or less a communication supposedly to me after a long period of like suppression or misery that I was put through. And this is when I was in that Joy of Satan cult, and they would pull you. Like in one example, I was meditating. I got a little bit of podcast rust here. Mm-hmm. I was meditating and suddenly I was in another place and I heard one of the handlers speak and I thought that they were an extraterrestrial because that's the role they were playing. And it was an issue that I had been bringing up over and over again. It was about special treatment that others were getting versus me. And I would put a lot of time in. Long story, but they were making us meditate to give us psychic rewards, just to put it like that. And I wasn't getting anywhere. Others were. I was working harder than them. So they pulled me into this alternative reality. I was in a dark void with a grayish light and I was spoken to. But the thing was, all of my grievances couldn't be addressed because some other version of me was talking and had no clue. It was like being in a dream where you lose the context or remembrance of self. You don't know who you are. Or you just kind of dropped into a situation. That's what it was like. And somebody was speaking on my behalf that it was me, but they didn't have my grievances in mind. So that happened to me before too. Mm-hmm. In regard to getting to these memories, from my experience, really what it comes down to, I think at the core of it is you have to declare your sovereignty. You have to fully detach, like I was talking about, those dependent thought patterns and how they create those silver-corded attachments to this archonic AI, which is what these ETs are using. And now the military-industrial complex has access to that and other variations of it. And the best way, in my opinion, really, is you have to break those connections with these handlers, the ETs, whatever you're experiencing. If you feel special because you're being abducted, that's the wrong attitude. Mm-hmm. It's a violation of your human rights to be abducted. There's nothing special about being in these programs. There's nothing special about being a super soldier or having some psychic abilities that you really don't have full control over because the programs do. And they're the reason you don't have them. And they're also the reason you have little bits and pieces of your old self that you can access and you can use these abilities, but it's always at a low level and it's always at their discretion. Because if you notice, few people, except for those in CIA projects, research, Stanford Research Institute has ever really demonstrated strong psychic abilities because they sweep it under the carpet and they hide these people and they abduct them and they cord them up with these implants and they shut them down. Mm. So we're really in a spiritual psychic prison.
Yeah.
So the way to break out of that is that you have to declare your sovereignty and you have to cut all ties of dependence with these beings, with the military-industrial complex that's doing this to you, which comes in the form of the handlers. Over that process, once you start doing that, that means losing the fear. When someone says, man, I think I'm going to get hammered if I do this podcast or if I go public, things are going to get worse. Of course they are, but you can't let that stop you. Mm. Because if you let that stop you, you give control to them. And you give control to them, you give dominance, and then that's it. They've got you, and they will continue to have you until you break free. Another good example is one of the strategies that they'll use to prevent you from getting very far with this is they'll give you a false life mission and tell you that you have something great you're going to do. And then they'll facilitate you to a degree with that, but it's never going to happen, and you're going to deal with repetitive heavy targeting and sabotage in your life as you try to achieve that. That's to get you to just, you know, to give it up. Mm-hmm. It's part of the conditioning process. Sorry.
I've had cases in my life where these do-gooders popped up at certain intervals in my life and befriended me and wanted to do some kind of joint project with me, which necessitated me picking up and moving either to Los Angeles, going to Hawaii, some other place with people I barely knew. And I'm thinking, no, this doesn't feel right. It's like, you know, why is this person to bring me closer to them, you know, for some unspecified purpose, supposedly all well and good. But what if things don't go exactly as planned? Then what? Is there a plan B? A quick point I want to make, and got another, and then we'll get Logan's take on this because he's got a lot of thoughts about this as well. One of the ways that they derail you from waking up with your memories is, and it runs the gamut. It could be you're waking up and you're clinging on to these last vestiges of memories. Usually, if you can hang on to one memory in true fractal fashion, you can eventually pull in more memories. And for males, what they used to do, at least, was they start inserting mentally images of sex, sexuality, nude women, whatever, right? Get you locked in that frequency. And then if you give into that for a moment, poof, there's the memory. It's gone. Or some kind of distraction, like this happened to a friend of mine, Craig Bowers. He was having an encounter, a reptilian, a benign reptilian, showed up to him one night, was giving him all these cryptic messages. And he was trying to remember what the reptilian was trying to tell him. And then as he was waking up, he was trying to retain that memory. And then the phone rang mysteriously. And then it blocked that connection. He was in that twilight zone where he wasn't quite in his normal conscious awareness, rather in a more expanded kind of twilight awareness. But when the phone rang and no one was there, of course, that completely broke the connection, right? Logan, your thoughts on this, because tell our audience how you found this correlation between the manipulation of the weather, quite extreme in a single 24-hour period, up and down on the temperature scale, but how it seems to, as a intended result or a byproduct of the technology, scramble the memories of people like us.
Absolutely.
Because you were a like lucid dreamer, alternate reality operator par excellence. Now you're having difficulties retaining these memories and remembering your dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. Observation I made even just today, just before we did this, I just did a little bit of reading up and I've been making notes here and there, but it's not just here. It's not an Australian thing. Looks like from what I was reading, even just on a Reddit forum, this is people around the world where they've noticed, 2 o'clock, between 2 and 4 a.m., you'll get this sort of like, you know, ramping up in some way of the weather, and then it might go back down again, you know, so then it cools back down. And this is how I came across that forum, you know, because the guy was just saying, well, why is it, you know, between those times, it's just, it warms up, there's no sun, you know, and then once the sun is up, 6, 7 o'clock, it cools down, you know. And I thought about that, you know, that's exactly what I was making notes of for myself too. I've observed the same. I've noticed how my mindset gets, how that brain fog we were talking about, it clouds. The dream recall is horrible. I feel like I get knocked out, you know, between those times. And then it just started to remind me a little bit when you were saying about Dark City. If you remember the movie Dark City, they had their little midnight time of day, you know, where they'd knock everyone out. That's the reprogramming time. And I felt like maybe there's something to that, you know, maybe there is that time of day and night, well, in that case, night, which goes unnoticed, you know, like that, because in the movie Dark City, obviously, no one knew what was going on. No one was paying attention, you know, and most people wouldn't.
Yes, that was an extreme example of an alien-controlled society, which was literally was sleeping there, sleepwalking through it.
Yep. So I have seen it. It's very pronounced, especially when they do like they're quite drastic jumps. I've noticed if it gets the closest to somewhat normal-ish, then the recall's better. The worse they hammer something, day or night, then the fog, you know, in the brain, you know, it's worse. But also what comes through, because I find that on those days when they are doing the spiking, the dreams, they're manipulated. They're not mine. You know, they're completely fabricated sometimes. They're gibberish. You know, there's nothing. You can't analyze them even. They're nothing. I don't even write them down, you know, when they get that bad, because I know they're not even mine. But to actually answer a little bit the question, you know, that got raised before, I think maybe it goes a bit both ways. Maybe there might be an aspect that it's for our protection and whatever we're getting up to too, you know, because I feel like sometimes the, you know, some of the ops I was on, maybe, you know, like as I remembered some of the group that I was part of, you know, they did get infiltrated, you know, like I think I might have told you that, James. There was a guy that they picked off the weakest link in my group. I don't actually know the guy, you know, this is just in my dreams. I sort of saw the group I was part of. But they picked off a particular guy. They messed with him. This was Reptilian. And I saw it almost like a bit of like a remote viewing type thing. So I saw what they put him up, like they did to him. They broke him pretty bad in many, many, many ways. And he basically willingly gave up all this information about what we were up to, what we were doing. So that's where I started to think, well, maybe it's not always that they're blocking it, you know, in a bad way. You know, maybe we've actually blocked it.
It's a security measure. It's a security measure.
And I started to believe that myself. And I started to see some of the things I was doing, you know, and I thought maybe it's actually protecting me here and now, you know, because maybe I would have been picked up if, you know, there's things I know that I shouldn't know.
Well,
I just wanted to add something real quick.
Yeah, please.
I have a friend who has positive ET contact. She's not in my lab. Mm-hmm. She experienced a mind wipe and she told me about it. And I'm like, because I'm very suspicious of all these extraterrestrials. So the first thing I said was, you know, well, it was a red flag. It's like mind wipe, negative ET. So I said, well, why did they mind wipe you like that? Mm-hmm. And what she explained was that in case the enemy were to get her in some way or another, pull her out of her body, whatever, they wouldn't be able to get the information because they can block information. Even though everybody's telepathic, they have simulation consciousness manipulating technology like we have here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyway, I just wanted to add that. But if you think about it, if you want to make a police state in a telepathic society, I just want to say this real quick. You take everybody's ability of being telepathic away, just like we've got here. Mm. So we're under an occupation. This is a police state within a police state within a police state. So I'll stop. And
By this point, we should be able to telepathically communicate with each other, but our consciousness has been muted to such a degree. One of the guys that I wanted to get on the show, for those of you that joined us late, John Franklin, he's going to be on a podcast on my show pretty soon. He talked about, he was the one that described a lot of these alternate reality MyLab experiences, deep space, off-world type operations with like galactic fleets and interstellar fleets and what have you. He said that there were times when the deep black military aerospace here would try to debrief him, interrogate him about what he experienced over there in the alternate realm. Mm-hmm. So it's similar to what you're talking about. And there's an element of cosmic espionage too. Lorena, who I've had on the show, she talked about how her consciousness was taken out of her body in an underground facility, and she saw as the military put in this smoky, shadowy being in her and then sent that being inside of Lorena off on a mission through a portal, right? Stargate. And also another friend of mine, she was telling me that it's not just like the ability to take over somebody momentarily. I've done this before where I've broken into an underground base astrally, and then I'm walking down the corridor and I look down and suddenly I'm wearing a lab coat and I see a security badge hanging on my chest. Now, did I jump into someone? Was I a walk-in or somehow did I was able to assume that guise? I don't know. But for whatever reason, I appeared to be some geek in a lab coat in an underground base. So I you know, gone about my spying like unobserved and left alone, basically. There's a cosmic espionage aspect where a friend of mine told me they put her on one table, like an inclined tilted table. They put an ET body, comatose body, in the inclined table next to her. And then similar to what they did to Ted Rice, they transferred her consciousness into the ET body. Okay? We often hear about ETs taking people over, hosting them, whatever. But this is like the opposite of that. Yeah. They put her consciousness, which is controlled MyLab accessed consciousness, into the ET, and then sent it off to some alien space station somewhere for some kind of unspecified espionage mission. So there's a lot of fudge factor at work. Yeah. And a quick point I want to make, and then I'll take another question. And it's related to the ability to retain our memories. Like me, I'm a real big believer in lavender oil. I don't snort this stuff. I inhale it. And it has wondrous properties as far as brain function, as far as memory recall, what have you. So it's a form of plant medicine. And I've had colleagues who've used high doses. I wouldn't recommend this. I only bring it up because it's been mentioned to me by people I trust that they've used high dosages of psilocybin or whatever the case may be. And then under the tutelage of a shaman, their abilities really started, their powers really started to ramp up. And then what happened was suddenly they got hit by the helicopters, which weren't really helicopters, hit by the targeted, you know, remote targeting, the gang stalking. Everything went through the roof in true Adjustment Bureau fashion, knocked the guy for a loop. And it took him a while just to recover, just to get back to his normal physical and psychic levels. So clearly, and I've heard this from a number of people, the moment they plateau and reach a new level, rather, of psychic abilities, suddenly they start getting messed with by all these forces. Yep. So I just thought that I'd throw that out. Another question from our great audience here. Can they manipulate our ability or decide that they want us to have an experience at will? And I don't know if this is related. Is it possible that they hook themselves to the body through heavy metals and nanoparticles pumped in the air and parasites? I would agree with that. Heaven, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I kind of feel like they've tried to turn me into a cyborg, and I say that with as little humor as possible. I do feel that, you know, the nanotechnology is in our food, it's in our water, it's in everything. And I feel that they have been able to successfully program me to with some degree of loyalty. And it's not out of any, you know, it's not necessarily that I appreciate anything about the program or that I'm happy about the program. It's just that I'm relatively a young person and I have a very long life. Well, I have a lot of years left. And there's like a I felt the pressure of like full targeting. I felt the pressure of like going against the grain. And I feel that I have alters that they've installed and they've been able to run circuits through my body and pretty much install these alters that have some degree of loyalty. And it's a robotic nature. I've started to see, I'm not trying to get too off topic, but I've started seeing military personnel in my dreams. And, you know, I've built some bonds with these beings. I'm not necessarily sure if that has anything to do with, like I said, them turning me on with the nanotechnology and I'm able to interface with these beings more efficiently. But I do believe it's in the air. I believe it's in the water. I believe they're still terraforming the earth. And I believe they're making particularly my labs or alien abductees more susceptible to a program. And I feel very programmed. I feel very mind controlled. I have another alter that'll come out and speak a different accent. A completely different accent. The accent you hear right now, standard American English. I have another accent that'll come out in a fit of rage. If someone gets me very angry, I'll start yelling and a real southern drawl will come out of me, considering that I grew up in the South. A real southern drawl will come out of me. Just the ability to compartmentalize my mind, I believe that the nanotech, and I didn't take the jab. I didn't take any jab. But, you know, I've had experiences where they're able to almost shocked me with some degree of electricity will charge through my body and I'll feel like this vibration. I spoke about a time when I was laying in my room and my body locked up on me and I lost control of all my limbs and my legs started to go towards the ceiling and I couldn't move. It wasn't even a cramp. My leg just started to move towards the ceiling and I heard this loud V2K voice saying, "We got you. You know, we have you." Pretty much like, you know, we have your morphic resonance, that type of thing. And they're able to pretty much control me to some degree or control an alter of my mind. Also, I find myself in the lucid state or the lucid conscious dreams that I'm in. I don't ask questions. I'm not going to ask questions. It's there's like I said, they've built bonds between me and certain beings now, whether they're handlers or their peers in that field. So I had a dream. And it was very lucid and I was at some base and it was, you know, we were in the outside part of the base, and I'm walking, and there's these very tall beings. This was more recent than anything, and they're all in, like, army uniforms, and some of them are, like, 6.5, 7 feet tall. One particular being was about 8 feet tall, and they just started shaking my hand as I walked past each and every one of them as, like, some form of them commending me. It was very bizarre, but they were able to build that bond, and I just feel like they've tried to program and create this level of loyalty through me. I feel like the nanotechnology in the water, the food, the air, I feel like that makes me more susceptible. And they have an altar of my mind that they do have control over. You know, it's set in place through a lot of things. I don't know how to go about that. I've been on many of your podcasts, James, and I'm not necessarily sure how to approach any of this. I didn't get the help I needed. And it's not that I expected any help. I have a very strong mind and I can navigate through these things myself, but I'm at a loss of words. I don't necessarily know where to go from here. You know, I could potentially join the military at this point. I'm really not exactly sure where this is going. I have a long life ahead of me, but, and I'm sorry I went on that rant, but, I feel like it was necessary. I wanted to say that just in case anyone was listening.
No, thank you. Because it's apropos for what we're discussing, and we'll talk more later about, you know, options. If you really want to do the military, you know, there's, you know, give some thought to that, and we'll have a discussion about that. Quick point, and I want you know, Nathan's thoughts on this: the ability to infuse all of these ingredients within us, the nanotech, the graphene, what have you. I believe, and a number of us believe, that we were the ones that were beta tested, because I clearly remember occasions in underground bases where there were lines of us, lines of abductees, presumably abductees in my labs, and we were just waiting in line, moving up, and then when it was our turn, there was like a table there, a nurse there, and they would give us an injection and then send us off into the base somewhere. So we're talking about mass, I don't know, inoculation efforts or mass something having to do with the injection of these unknown substances in us. That's on top of what some of the ETs do. Constantly, in some cases, injecting us, constantly drawing fluids out of us. So, you know, there's that element too, where is it possible that we were used as beta test subjects for this mass rollout later on, right? So just food for thought. Nathan, your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think we can look at the grays as a good example of what the end result of this is. If you take a look at the Farsight Institute's remote viewing project on the Greys, what they found is there was a race of people that look kind of like Greys, but more human-like than that, sort of in between, kind of like maybe the hybrids that we see, but I don't have an accurate description. But they were a race of people with a normal range of human or human-like emotions or just emotions. They had a wide emotional span. They were just like people. And fully telepathic and everything. And it was a planet-wide genocide by the reptilians. They completely wiped them out. Some of the survivors, they were able to escape. They formed a resistance movement, and then the rest became the Greys. And then they were used, and they've been used ever since through the same processes, such as the My Labs. I would assume they can, obviously, they're going to be able to fracture their consciousness, and they're going to be able to create multiple versions of the same individual. So you can propagate it like that. And so they've created this army of workers. So inside there, well, they fed us a lie through a lot of contactees over the years that the Greys were just programmed life forms. They were like animatronic biological androids that are AI programmed. In fact, they're AI controlled souls inside a genetically modified container body, which prevents them from doing much other than following orders. And if you look at what they're doing here, it's essentially the same thing. The first thing they did is they limited our consciousness to 5 senses with a type of a simulation technology. Then they basically fortify our physical forms with lots of poisons. This is in, you know, many, many shit, a long time later. Of course, this is now, you know, the present. We've had the simulation. We've had the false religions where they take and they replace God with their self. And essentially what they're doing, from the top, if you look at the Greys as the most extreme example, and you look at us, which is somewhere down here with, you know, the Greys up there, what you're seeing is they're cutting us all off from the Creator. Mm-hmm. They're shutting the connection between each of us down to where they control. It's kind of like you need a cell phone instead of, you know, telepathy. I mean, that's a metaphor in a sense, but it's a lot more extreme than that. They're cutting us off from God, more or less, and they're playing God. They become God. The AI becomes God. And that's the strategy. It's a it's a slave planet, and they want to use – they've used all of these technologies on the MyLabs, the abductees. You know, you can use that Egyptian phrase, as above, so below, basically. And so they're all they're doing is they're running the same program, only different. I see the Greys just being more or less biological robots. But with humanity, they've taken a race and they've engineered them to be warlike. They've engineered us to be more or less our own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. So we're very warlike. We're very primitive of thinking. We're very tribal. And what a great way to program a population of people to become slaves to be used in offensive wars by the negative ETs, because it seems like the pattern is they don't fight their own wars. They use proxies, and they're using slave labor to do that, just like they use the Greys for the, you know, the menial tasks, the, you know, the lab work and so on. But you don't hear about Grey super soldiers. You see people and other types of human ET hybrids doing this. So you have more or less, we're here to be their defense force, where the Greys are the, you know, they just kind of keep the machine going, is more or less what's happening. The heavy metals and all that, it's all part of the program. The more you put into yourself, the worse it gets. You know, you got to watch your diet. You got to basically eat very primitively, meat and vegetables. Don't put any condiments on it. Don't do any of these things. You got to watch what you ingest and try to detox, and don't gain much weight, because you'll store it in your fat and you become basically a toxic storehouse for poison. And then you, obviously, you inflame more, you take on more water, you get bigger. But yeah, I mean, that's what they're doing. And with the stabinations, it's similar. It reminds me of that leaked Pentagon video that was out where they were proposing creating a virus to affect the brain of people in the Middle East, the so-called fanatics, and to stop the Islamic fanaticism. They were going to release a flu bug that was going to literally destroy that part of their brain that lights up in an EMG when they are exposed to religious propaganda or, you know, religious text. Yep. So that was the idea. And obviously, I think they've incorporated that technology in some of these stabination lots to where, because literally, I mean, people are getting this and they're already conditioned to be just unfeeling animatrons anyway. Just go out and be compulsive consumers, work, come home, and, you know, turn on the TV, be subjected to fear, and then forced to, you know, into more consumption to buy products, and then go to bed and repeat. And they're essentially, that's what they want. They wanted mindless consumers, but now they want people that are detached from each other. To when you see, it, like, you know, for example, I know a guy who took the stabination, wouldn't listen to anyone, had a stroke. He had a stroke in the middle of Walmart during the pandemic, and no one would help the man. He literally crawled out of the Walmart, crawled to his car, went to the emergency room, where he was declared he had a stroke and he was blind in one eye and he was disoriented. Nobody would do anything to help him because, you know, he's God, he's sick. Don't get near him. You'll get sick. Maybe he fell because he's infected. Mm-hmm. But it's that type of mentality is what they're propagating in these stabinations, this tech that's in these. It's not in all of them, but it's in some of these lots, because they want to see what it does. They're literally taking the humanity out of human beings, and it's disgusting. Yes. To stop.
Well, this is what Barbara Bartholdt talked about decades ago, the Breed Out the Love program. I've just had Eve Lorgan on my show. We talked about this very subject, and I was talking to Pierre Sabach earlier. He's going to be back on the show talking about his new book, Angelic Invasion. And we talked about how the worst, most degenerate aspects of the human psyche, consciousness, the degeneracy, the aggression, the lack of empathy, etc., through this, it's more than just social engineering, because we know there's a technological, as you just said, Nathan, stabination ingredient aspect to it as well, among other things. But what they managed, and also the malign entity influence too, Jerry Marzinski talks about this, the insertion of intrusive thoughts, modifying behavior, what have you. And on top of that, all the mind control, pervasive mind control that goes on. Bottom line is, they have created entire generations now of self-absorbed, narcissistic people with a lack of empathy, aggressive. They've been reduced to the most brutish, lowest common denominator. Like you would have thought after thousands of years of civilization, they would have evolved beyond this. But what we're seeing now is a regression. It's not an evolution or a progression. It's a regression for a lot of the masses. And we see an extreme example of this, where Gavin Newsom is like giddy when he's talking about, well, I was just consulting with the governor of Hawaii since we just DEW that place. He was giving me advice on how to, you know, build new developments, right? And then you have that bizarre communist terrorist mayor, right? Just giving this video to the public where she's like giddy, right? And that's another thing that I point out nowadays is we tend to think of these DEI types as, you know, they're harmless, they're just woke, they're just leftards. No, some of them are genocidal maniacs. Some of those people are afflicted with this hive consciousness, archontic, demiurgic, conquering mentality. So we're seeing the supplanting of this human consciousness connected to source and being replaced by this kind of sadistic clown show mentality. I've got another question here. And I thank you so much, audience, dear audience, for participating. And this is a doozy, and this is what we've all talked about at one time or another. Why do the aliens manipulate our souls? What would they do with the soul? Take it out, put it back? Why drain its energy? Put a tortured soul in an alien clone as their soldiers? Logan, did you want to tackle that first?
Yeah, I mean, a few of us have already sort of hinted at it anyway. You know, if you sort of think about the Gnostic aspect, you know, if they sort of, you know, make it seem like, well, actually everything that's here is sort of trapped here just as we are, you know, including all the alien life, you know, so it's not actually that we're the only ones trapped, so are they. So, you know, if we're trying to find our way out, so are they, you know, whichever form that takes, you know. So I have heard that pretty much that's exactly why, you know, the soul gets manipulated, because that is the way out. You know, if we are the ones that are more able to change, you know, the way that Nathan was hinting that, you know, the Greys, you know, where they went off in a bit of a tangent that's, you know, away from where we are, you know, and some of the evolution went, you know, in a regressive, you know, sort of fashion. So you sort of think that, you know, if we are the ones that are the moldable ones, essentially, you know, they're the ones that, you know, that's why we are sort of being manipulated in that way, you know, because we're the ones with capacity, capability, you know, whatever direction it goes.
Well, the raw material, if you will, because what if in our timeline, and we often hear stories about Greys or a faction of the Greys coming back in time to try to fix, from an evolutionary standpoint, biological standpoint, where everything went haywire. Yeah. Well, what if the rollout of the Stabonations was where that began? Yep. You know what I mean? I mean, you never know. Because Dan Burish talks about working with the J-Rods at S4 in a biosphere environment. And the ET he was paired up with, we call them J-Rod also, that's what they were trying to figure out, supposedly, if taken at face value, that they were trying to get back to where they were before this fork in the road, and they evolved / de-evolved into their current present gray-like state, right? So that's an interesting thought. And also Evie Lorgan brings this subject up too. It may have something to do with the chipping away of souls and shards of souls. And it's a long-term conundrum that we abductees in my labs have is, can we trust our memories? Are our memories of necessity, however fragmented they may be, are they of necessity our own? And if they're our own, are they from this reality, this timeline, this incarnation, or from another incarnation, another reality, right? So because there's a school of thought, this came up in my discussion also with Pierre Sawbach, that, you know, when we incarnate, what's to stop us from incarnating, say, instead of into a future timeline, incarnating into the past? What if we had the means to do that? Certainly the aliens seem to be able, as they told Dan Sherman, who was in this secret NSA Air Force project communicating with aliens, the aliens, the Greys in this case, had the ability to go around time. Mm. We're stuck in this linear, almost two-dimensional flat field effect on a treadmill going forward one direction. Mm. But these ETs seem to be able to come in and out at key juncture points. Heaven, what are your thoughts about this as far as the souls, the manipulation of the souls, and what have you?
Well, we have to think about the origin of the soul. So, and this is not to be a glass half empty type. This is more of like the glass is a hologram type of thought. Pretty much, no one knows how long we've been doing this. Time is an illusion. No one knows how long we've been doing this. No one knows where our souls generate from. We're not in base reality. The chances of us being in base reality are 1 in billion. So, say we're in simulation 100. That means that your soul was generated from this simulation or a prior simulation. Like I said, the chances of us being in base reality are 1 in billion. What chances does that leave us with being in a simulation anywhere remotely close to base reality? So you have to think about the origin of our souls in this reality. So even if I'm not from this reality, say we're in simulation 100 right now, and say I'm from simulation 99, I'm still not an organic consciousness. Mm-hmm. I'm still not an organic soul. Say that a consciousness itself or the soul itself is a program, and they're able to run this program on our brain, which acts like a computer. So where are our souls coming from? And then that would give them the entitlement. That would give them the feeling of entitlement and ownership over our souls, considering that we're nowhere remotely close to base reality. Like I said, I've said this before in a previous podcast with you. The further out you get from base reality, the wackier it gets. The wackier and wackier and wackier it gets. It's just like we're in the twilight zone. So when you have these beings who have this deep, deep level of entitlement over our souls, it makes me question what our souls are inherently. You know, in the Matrix, they hold the battery up, and they say that the Matrix uses souls like a battery to charge this reality. And they also say that this reality is a projection of a collective consciousness or a collective mind. Right. So these are all ideas that are held up the same alley, I'd say. But yeah, we're definitely being used as a battery. That is one of the most, in my theoretical beliefs, it's one of the most powerful energy sources. Energy sources in this reality or in this universe, this multiverse. Like I said, that deep level of entitlement comes from perhaps them knowing the origin of our souls. You know, who is the God of this reality? You know, that is the question that I've always been willing to ask. Who is the God of this dimension? Who is the God of these simulations? Who has generated this simulation? Like I said, we're getting to the point where we're almost able to create a simulation, but I guarantee you AI will beat us to it. I guarantee you AI will beat us to it. So if it's hard for the human mind to grasp how this reality was constructed inherently, it's definitely not hard for AI to grasp how this reality was constructed. How this reality was coded and programmed. I believe we're fragments of the creator itself. I do believe that there, and this is not facts, this is my theory, that there is a great chance that our souls are programmed to some degree. Charges of energy, charges of light, charges of non-corporeal, non-physical, not matter at all. But, you know, and I believe that's why they have this level of entitlement. But if my thoughts were opposing to any of your beliefs, I'm not trying to offend anyone. This is just my thought on why they may have entitlement or obsessions over our souls and how they utilize them as energy sources.
Well, it's clear that they have a sense of entitlement because the Greys, the Mantis beings, presumably the Draco and others, they seem to be involved in the death and dying process. Not only do they hang around funeral homes and mortuaries and cemeteries, but when people die, they seem to be plugged into this rinse, recycle, repeat kind of mode. Yep. And also the conundrum of shards, where if we are indeed fractals and our souls are fractals, an entity and warlocks, hybrid adepts here on Earth can do this. They can chip away at someone's soul, store it, and utilize it for some purpose. Nathan, your thoughts about this?
I just want to say I really love the questions here. You have an educated audience, James, which reflects directly on you and your work. So yeah. I'm very, very thankful for that. Yeah, let's break this down. It kind of goes back to, actually, Heaven said something like the AI is going to beat us to that augmented reality or to the simulation. And technically it has, but it's it's transdimensional, extraterrestrial, archonic AI that kind of got there first, and we're trying to create our own, but we already have an augmented reality. And one of the themes running is the United States government is an honest government, has never done anything wrong, and always has the best interests of everyone at heart. That's the biggest simulation here in you know, the current sense. But why do they use our souls? It goes back to what I was saying with the AI. It treats people like cattle. It treats souls like a commodity, like ones and zeros in a computer mainframe, I guess you could say. And so it's using everyone in a pragmatic way as it sees fit. So nobody has any value. There's no value over anything. It's just managing a commodity. I think that's kind of setting the, I would say that sets the level of spiritual aptitude that these ETs have. Mm-hmm. The ones that we're dealing with, the negatives, because they don't respect life. They don't even respect their own life, because it seems as if they're under control by AI. So the AI can't create, they can only pervert, corrupt, and manage. So therefore, you know, that's what they're using them for. So they need us for slave labor. They're basically, if you want to look at it like this, it's like, the owners of the prison are the archons, and then you have, you know, below that the AI manages it, and then you have those who are like the prison gangs, which are these extraterrestrial groups that are self-serving, that have been completely taken over by the AI, and they act as a proxy to mess with us and convert us. It's kind of like the Borg in Star Trek. They're trying to assimilate us into this system. It's a difficult question to answer, because there's so many different aspects to this. There's why, I mean, they need us for lots of different resources. We do the fighting, we do the labor, everything. So, I mean, that's really the answer. I would just, you know, it's a complicated question, but it has a simplistic answer. If you look back, if you don't have God in your heart and you're self-serving and you're selfish and that's all you care about, of course, if you're under AI control, that's, you're not even going to get any aspect of emotions or anything. There may not be anything left of you. You're going to do whatever it wants you to do. So, therefore, this makes perfect sense. I'm sort of losing track of where I'm going here, but what I'm saying is that they can't create, the AI can't create, the ones behind it want control, and they want to exploit people and exploit souls, and this is what it looks like. And that's the best way I can answer that question. But like I said, it goes back to the original AI intent, which is to use souls as a commodity. Once you do that, anything's possible.
I have a quick question.
Yeah, please.
Where are we? How far from base reality are we? Are we from? Like, where are we? Oh, what reality are we in?
That's a good point.
I just have to add a point.
How long have we been doing this? Like, who is the God that generated this reality? Are we a fractal of that being? Is that being a omniscient, omnipotent, all divine AI, or not divine, my bad, dualistic AI program that created this reality? So Elon Musk, I don't take anything necessarily that he says is true, but he said one thing, and he said that there's 1 in billions chance that we're in base reality. How far from base reality are we? How long have we been doing this? Can we traverse these simulations backwards? I doubt it. You'd have to be conjured out of this reality to traverse the simulations backwards. So we're kind of in a space where we're forced to keep creating simulations. How long have we been doing this? Who's the God of this reality? Yeah, and it all just plays into our souls. It plays into our souls.
Point, and I'd like Nathan's thoughts on this, because he was going to say something. But if we can't go backwards, so to speak, and the ultimate ceremony of every First Nation tribe around the world, the ceremony harkens back to a previously uncorrupted time, point in the distant past, before the demiurgic forces came in, a true golden era, right? What's been likened to the, I hate to use computer simulation terms again, but going back to the original source code, the computer source code, before it was corrupted by this demiurgic force, which has been described to me by a mystic as innumerable tendrils coming out of the core of every galaxy in existence. Just these tendrils representing this demiurgic force spreading out in every direction and gradually subsuming everything in its path. So you were going to say something, Nathan?
Yeah, I heard. I thought I was on mute. What you just described essentially is an AI network with these little filaments and, you know, strings or chords, you know, connecting everything. What I was going to say is, as far as the God stuff goes and everything, as I've moved forward and separating myself from the mind control, which is why I'm on the soapbox now, you know, don't give them anything. Don't give them credit for anything because you think they've done something for you. In fact, it may have been the positive side that did something for you and they took credit for it. Something that they do that, you know, they will co-opt any positive thing that happens in your life just to get you thinking in that dependent thought pattern, which gives them power and takes it away from you. So I'm a big advocate of that because that's the way out of this. You got to lose the fear and you got to separate the connections between them. You know, it doesn't matter if it's like, they're going to kill me if I speak or they're going to kill me if I take my life back, then so be it. It's better than living with them in control. Yep. Also, so what I wanted to say is that I've tapped into a kind of a multidimensional reality where I've recognized that there's parts of me in different places simultaneously, which is, you know, I always knew that that was the case and we hear about it in science, but it's just like, you know, you hear about it, it's a concept that seems pretty far-fetched. But when you can actually connect with some of those pieces of yourself and you realize that that's where your intuition comes from. And so just imagine a flow chart and you're all over the place and you're connected by silver cords. There's little circles on a flow chart. Those circles can network together.
Yes.
And they can get the hijacked portions or versions of you out of the hijacking. So when people start to integrate their altars, that's that process. When people start to realize and have these epiphanies and these spiritual experiences where this is just going to speak from a MyLab perspective because I don't have the full perspective of other people. When you start getting when this starts to happen, it's I guess the best way to put it would be not a renaissance, not a revolution, a liberation of spirit, more or less. Those parts are starting to break you out, and you have to embrace that. So I've experienced that, and once that started to happen, I was able to realize where the influence was coming from because I separated, I got them out of my head. And I was able to open myself up to recognizing where the positive influences were coming from. They were coming externally from other beings, but they were also mostly coming from my parts. And I'm saying this is all of my pieces, all of my soul fragments. So what they've done, what I've noticed or what I've learned is what they've done is we exist in a multidimensional manner anyway. It's the normal state of existence. There's multiple timelines. It's the mind of the creator. It's almost like we exist and we know we're self-aware, but it's an illusion of individuality. It's a kind of illusion of existence. We're actually part of a collective mind shining through everyone and experiencing things through everyone. And essentially what's happened is this AI, which was created by all of us, and ultimately, including the Archons, they're part of this construct as well. They're not above it. They're just either more ancient, more evolved, whatever you want to put it. They are part of this collective, multidimensional, multi-mind construct of the creator, which also keeps and maintains itself in an independent frame of mind. So it's not like totally absorbed in all of us. It actually is a referee as well. And when I've been able to push them out and get the mind control out, that's when God comes in. Excuse me. That's when God comes in, and then you start to connect with those unhijacked parts. You start to connect with the creator, and you start to get your marching orders. And you realize that how weak and pathetic these beings are, and that everything you're experiencing is being done to you out of consent from the top down. We're trapped here in this simulation, and I just want to define what it is. I don't see it as a grand simulation that totally encompasses the universe. They haven't gotten that far yet. I'm seeing localized ones around the planet, and I'm seeing simulations within simulations, because when you can separate and you cut off the God connection, you cut off the telepathic connection, you take the psychic abilities away, you have a blank canvas to create any simulated reality you want, and North Korea's one, United States is one, Britain's one, Australia's one, and on. Each government has its own version of propaganda. Even though they're more unified now, it's still an augmented reality. And what they're afraid of is us breaking out of that, because that's freedom. How far away are we from the baseline reality? I don't know if there's a way to measure that. I do know that from, you know, information I've gotten indirectly from people that, you know, that there's a belief, and the handlers told me this, which I don't necessarily take anything they say as fact, but you have to look at it subjective. You have to look at it and analyze and see if there's any value to it. But it seems to me that the collective story is that we've been in a simulation for about 1 million years, and that's where we're at right now. And there's efforts to get us out of this, but it requires a complete renaissance in the way we think. We have to question everything. We have to think for ourselves, and we have to connect with the Creator and start to learn to love one another again. Instead of being separate in this disgusting augmented reality where everyone is programmed to try to get a little bit more for their self without recognizing that we should be sharing everything, working collectively, our work would be less, our strife would be less, and we'd be happy. Anyway, that's just what I wanted to add to that.
Many hands make for less work, and to the point that Heaven made about, well, if we can't go back and get back to the original uncorrupted source code, if you will, the golden era before the demiurge of corruption, is there a way to progress forward and, like you said, create our own simulation unfettered, unmolested by all these negative forces? I think it's within the realm of possibility. I think that it's possible. But it's going to take a lot of work.
If you live in denial, James, I think we got to get rid of it altogether. There's no half measure.
Yeah. There's no half measures. We got to go. Clearly, these beings working through their hybrid plantation managers are pulling out all the stops now. The DEW fires, the potential for global nuclear war, et cetera, we're at that stage. And because of what's been happening, I've been going back and reading William Bramley, and I've just ordered that book by Dr. Richard Thompson, the late, great Dr. Richard Thompson, who went into deep study of the ancient Vedic texts, the Hindu texts from India about Vamanas and wars of gods and men and wars in outer space, right? I figure the best way to kind of prep me mentally for what's going on and what's potentially going to happen going forward is to remind myself about what had gone on in the past as far as cosmic wars are concerned. And getting back to the notion of the original Aboriginal timeline, if you will, in alternate realities. When I think of some of these alternate realities and these advanced civilizations from these alternate realities that have the means to access us, and it's clear to me, the descriptions given to me by some of the MyLabs I'm in comms with, that these super advanced human civilizations and alternate realities that access some of us, they seem to be more advanced than the what's been described as Solar Warden, what's been described as a secret space program here. So that tells me there used to be a school of thought, I'm sure you guys have heard it, that no, we're the original Aboriginal timeline. We're the original reality. Everything branched out from us. Now I'm not so sure. It could be like what Heaven was just talking about. We're so far removed from base reality. Which simulation are we? But the fact that beings from other realities can access us and use us in ops in their realities, and simple kind of experiences from our standpoint of an interdimensional entity opening a portal and sticking its interdimensional head in our dimensional room, okay? Point being is that if an entity, a single entity, could do that, stick its head through a portal into our reality, what's to stop these really advanced civilizations from accessing us, like I pointed out at the beginning, and utilizing us in these ops? So I've always said, we shouldn't only look at this from this perspective of what can I do in this reality. The potential exists that we can do things in other alternate realities that may have a material benefit to us here. And what we perceive of as intuition, at times, these epiphanies and flashes of insight, What if, from an oversoul perspective, the umbrella over which beneath it are all of our disparate selves in all realities, all times, all states of being, James Bartley as an alien, if you will, in one or more parallel realities? What if, at times, when we're seeking the answer to some conundrum, some problem, we may not have the answer from our own personal experience in this incarnation, in this timeline, but because of quantum entanglement, because of our connection to our disparate selves in other timelines, other realms, here comes what passes or seems to us to be an epiphany mm-hmm. or an intuition. And of course, you have to overlay on top of that the potential, which I think has happened a lot, of these higher intelligences, be they spirit guides, ET guides, whatever the case may be, dropping little truth nuggets into us in a quiet moment. And Logan, because you've had so many experiences, conscious experiences in these alternate realities, mm-hmm. give us your thoughts on that. And also, if you don't mind, tell us a bit about your interactions in these alternate realities, because correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to be state dependent. At times you seem to be able to have a corporate body of knowledge, an institutionalized memory, state dependent when you're there, yeah. which you may not necessarily be able to remember here. Yeah. You have families there, sometimes at the same families as here, sometimes a little different. Tell us a little bit of reality in an alternate reality.
Yeah, I mean, I'd absolutely agree with what I've heard until now. I'd probably just add by just saying that I feel like we're not as cut off as what they make us feel we are. I mean, from our other selves. I mean, I feel like that's why all the blanketing happens. You know, I feel like that's why all the everything they're doing. All right, having us feel like we are cut off from source, having us feel like we are cut off from our other selves, all right? But we're not. That's at least what I've seen every time, even as clouded over as I've been in my dreams, it's been exactly what you just said. You know, I've still had this knowing of something that I don't know here. There's been some like, it's almost like all the versions of me are on the same page. All right, and is knowing, you know, of where things are going and, you know, where things are at, even if I'm not here, you know. And I think that's exactly, again, why they do what they do, you know, because that's the fracturing. You know, if they have us believe that we just cannot tap into what we are, you know, that the other versions of us are so, like, foreign that we need someone to, you know, do some hypnosis session on us or whatever that is, you know, it's always there. You said it yourself just now, James, you know, when you were sort of saying might be an intuitive thought. Could be anything that comes to us, because that is still, we are still existing all at once, you know, like past, present, future, all of it is still us, you know. And it's a little bit like, you know, War in Heaven has said, and Nathan's hinted at too, consciousness is not linear, you know, like it's not just what we're experiencing now, you know, like, and, you know, people can sort of tap into touches of that when they do get hypnotized or whatever it is, and they might see something in the past or the future or whatever it is, but they dug it out of us, you know, we had it, you know, it was just the conscious recall that's been clouded over, which is exactly why I sort of feel like the day-to-day what they're doing is what it is. I would just add by just saying that that's why even more I suggest, you know, the writing, you know, journaling, especially when things do come through, because the way that you said, James, they might, something might flow through, but then they'll cloud you over the rest of the day and that thought's gone, you know, and it could have been something like a direction to go in, you know, something to look up, you know, something it might have been beneficial, you know, health-wise. I've had that so many times, you know, something came in my dreams and I wrote it, and it was something pretty, like I wouldn't have found it consciously, you know, and I wrote it down thinking, well, that sounds weird, what's that? And I look it up and it is actually something, and it's of value, but I got it from me. And I guess that's the whole point, you know, because if you sort of consider that we, you know, are in different levels, you know, like we are what we are here, the different versions of us, you know, in the other timelines or, you know, other versions, alternate realities, they're going to still have different reflections, different life experiences. They're going to have pieces we don't, but we can still tap into it, and they're still tapping into ours. I think it goes both ways. That's at least my understanding of everything. I felt like it's been a two-way door, you know, so just the same way that we tap into something that's beneficial for us, it flows backwards for them too, you know, things that maybe they're stuck on, our versions, you know, elsewhere. And then they might get that intuitive thing, you know, of something that we've learned here that they didn't realize there. So yeah, I would just, that would be my summary, you know, just sort of saying that I don't think it's as bleak as they make it sound. You know, they do do that, you know, as if sort of hinting that, you know, science will be the thing that will give us access to us, you know, unlock our DNA, unlock this, unlock that, you know, but we have everything, you know, they just don't want us to believe that we have.
I have a question. Yep. Excuse me for my stupid 20-year-old realm of thinking, if you will. But, so you say we're connected to source, yep, which I'm very open to the idea of. But so like theoretically, as far as I'm concerned, well, Nathan says that there are simulations inside of base reality and we're experiencing these simulations. Yep. Although we know the cosmos are coded with error-correcting codes and binary codes written into the fundamental equations used to describe this entire known universe, which means that this entire universe is inherently coded exactly like a video game, exactly like a binary code, zeros and ones all across the board. The entire universe coded like that. So with my theory, let's just use it as an example. It's not concrete at all. Say that we're in simulation 30 or 40 or whatever may have you. Do you believe that the source energy? Okay, so my theory is, and this is going to be out there, but base reality is not necessary not necessarily corporeal, being that it exists as light and energy and other non-corporeal forms of information and code. But say that that is God, right? Say that that is the divine powerhouse of energy or power source of energy. And every simulation after it is following and being generated from that initial base reality simulation. Could our connection to source energy be the connection to that initial base reality that is being streamed and powering every reality after it? Is there a potentiality that that is what our source connection is inherently?
Yes.
I'd
have to say yes if I understood that right.
Was it my wording? I apologize if it was my wording.
No, it's not your wording. It could be my interpretation of it, but it sounded as if what you were saying is that basically is, you know, base reality God, I think is what you're saying, or that connection, right? Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Okay, yeah, then that would be right.
So let me just reform my thought quickly. So my idea is that, like, kind of like string theory, base reality exists. Because where does matter come from? And like I said, I might be stupid. I might be completely stupid. Where does matter come from? Where does matter generate from? So it's like, I would imagine that base reality is kind of non-corporeal, right? It's all existing as information or energy or light or divine source inherently. Yep. So if every simulation follows that base reality, would that would mean that every simulation following base reality is being generated by base reality. So that would be source God. And so even if we are in simulation 50 and it is linear, which it's not, but as far as string theory is concerned, say that we are way out here in the boonies in simulation 50. Would a base reality be able to reach us? Would that be our source connection to the inherent energetic power source that is God? Do we have that connection? Is that what source connection is?
I got a simple way to answer that.
Yeah.
Love.
Just go, please.
Embrace love. That's the thing that I've done. The one thing that they always try to do from the very beginning, and this is going back to my childhood, was to make you negative.
Yeah.
You come into this world with all this baggage from these programs, and the mind control would be OCD, could be any number of problems and personality disorders just appear out of nowhere. And, you know, we all know that kids come out of the womb as they are, not out as we make them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can teach a child to do everything you think is right, and they're going to, if they don't agree, they're not going to do it. But, yeah, it's love is the connection to get back to that base reality. Yeah. I can feel it. I mean, it's so strong that I've been searching for so long. There's absolutely no other option. I mean, that's it. That feels like it is. And when you connect to loving each other, let me get back to what I was saying. I'm starting to get emotional. They try to disconnect you from love. They want you to think basically, you know, everything's physical, everything's, and that's the other problem with this whole concept of a computer simulation. If you take it too far and you go beyond and call it the base reality, life is meaningless then.
Yeah.
And this is the religion of the elites. So they want to give you this concept and make you believe this is reality. Like all we are is ones and zeros, a binary code in a processor that's inside another processor, inside another one. And it's so that there's no creator. It's just an endless series of nested computer simulations, one computer inside another.
Just to interject for a second, you know, just to interject for a second, because it's in line with what you're saying. Right. One of our guests chimed in with the notion, or the hypothesis. Well, what if there is a cosmos beyond the simulation? Like, what if there is a real base reality that's completely unconnected to this series of simulations, that we just have to go back to it or find a way back somehow? Because it seems that with the reincarnational loop, especially as it pertains to this solar system and all the bazillions of people on this planet, and not all of them are ensouled, but many are, right? What if beyond the simulation there really is a cosmos? That's a profound question and ties in with what you just said, like, you know, falling into the trap, if you will, of just thinking everything's a simulation, because that feeds into the hopelessness and despair of it all, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
How can we traverse backwards, though? If we, so say, and this is coming from genuine curiosity. I'm not trying to be the black-pilled individual. This is coming from genuine curiosity. If the end goal is to get back to base reality, because for whatever reason we've been, I can't imagine why any soul would travel this far from base reality, unless we were conducting some sort of timeline experiment to see exactly what it's like and what the beings of these realities are currently experiencing, which, like I said, it would be extremely dangerous, because there'd be no guarantee that we ever make it back to base reality.
But what if the astral is based reality? Have you thought about that?
Not necessarily, because I believe that it's part of a fractal, but this is just my belief. I believe that it's, you know, it's all math at the end of the day. It's all just layered dimensions to this particular reality, or a multi-dimensional reality existing within that 12 cube. But
have you conceived of this, that this afterlife that people are reporting, which is what I've suspected, is part of the simulation? It's just like a timeout zone, and then they put us back in this one. And it's like two halves to a whole, and then everything else is on the outside of that, including the ETs. That's how I've been kind of seeing this. But there's a discrepancy there, and it offends people. And it's hard to determine whether you're right or wrong either side, because, you know, do you want to believe that your loved ones who weren't ET souls or whatever, however this works, do you want to believe your loved ones are in a false heaven just to be recycled, or is there hope? And it's just, it's a difficult question to ask, you can't answer it yet.
And it does come from genuine curiosity. Like I said, I'm not trying to seed any negative thoughts or any hopelessness or despair at all. But if the end goal is to traverse space-time backwards, is it possible? Is that the end goal? Because, I mean, if we just keep going down the rabbit hole, we're going to keep creating simulations and get further from base reality. And there's just more and more lawlessness and more degeneracy as we get further and further from base reality. So the question would be, are we from base reality? And if so, why did we come here and how do we get back?
I could chime in one analogy, at least I remembered seeing depicted anyway. You know, like, this just reminds me of the show Fringe. You know, which was, you know, from years ago now. But for people that, you know, aren't, you know, really up with all that, you know, she was sort of crossing over dimensions and doing all this sort of stuff. So she was from one main reality, but she was crossing over. But she got to this point where her consciousness would bleed over. All right. So she had conscious recollection, conscious even knowledge of, like, the other reality, as well as the one that she was in, because there was still her consciousness was the only thing that was actually, you know, crossing over. Technically, her body would still cross over physically, you know, if you want to get into that physical side of things, but it's always the consciousness that travels. So even what Nathan was saying, the afterlife, everything else, once you're out of the body, you know, that is where the travel comes in. And that's why we're never really cut off, you know, because that is the limiting part again, you know, having us believe that it needs to be purely a physical travel, you know. And I can just still remember some of the dreams I had where it wasn't always physical that I crossed over, you know, to go to some of these other realities. You know, sometimes it was my consciousness that was going over there. It wasn't. And then other times I saw the other way. it was physically as well. But either way, it just sort of seems like you'll find a way. You know, that's at least what I sort of, you know, took from the end point of it is, you know, you'll find the means. And it's still, bottom line is, we're not as actually powerless as they've led us to believe. That's all I still keep thinking at the end line, you know, of all this.
I agree. And there's also the possibility that if you traverse to that particular alternate reality that you're very familiar with, but you were a walk-in where you jumped into your counterpart, right? There's always that possibility as well. And, you know, it's the conundrum of, did you do that of your own volition? Was it an oversoul idea? Mm. Or did someone or something have a hand in making that process play out? So, yes, this is a very interesting question. And like the aliens, the Greys, Zeta Reticulians in particular, told Dan Sherman, he was in Project Preserve Destiny. Some of you familiar with the story. He was an intuitive communicator for Air Force Security Service, where he was telepathically communicating with Greys, finding out the serial number designation, identifying a particular abductee, and also the coordinates where the Zetas would pick them up and return them. He got into an unauthorized discussion with one of the Greys he was in telepathic comms with, and the Grey told him that we can go around time. So keeping that point in mind, who's to say that what we need to do, and I'm sure that heaven didn't have this in mind, I'm just creating a word picture here, that it's not necessarily that we have to traverse and go through all those layers of simulations to get back to the original source code, if you will, the original base reality. What if there's a way to go around it? And there's a lot of discussions in our field and in the paranormal field in general. And some of it, I would say, is somewhat tinged with hopelessness, despair. I like this notion that, and I'm not disputing it, I'm just pointing it out, that when they say on the point of death, when you leave your mortal coil and then you go through the light and then you're hit with this all-consuming, all-encompassing feeling of nirvana, that's where the mind wipe happens, right? And then you're sucked into the tunnel and then, you know, you go through the recycling process. Eventually, your number is called and you're ejected back into, you know, the earthly plane to go through it all again with the convenient mind wipe. There may be something to that. I'm satisfied that there is some kind of recycling operation underway. It may not be unique to this planet. Similar planets could be farmed, if you will, in a similar way. I can't believe that we're the only such farm in the multiverse, right? But point being is that if we were pulled into this by hook, by crook, whether we volunteered at some level, okay, there has to be an exit strategy. I can't believe, and maybe just me whistling past the cosmic graveyard, okay? Glass half full me again. But if there's a way that we found ourselves in this mess, there has to be a way, an eject button, to get us out. And maybe by plugging into our more advanced versions of ourselves, whether they're entirely human or alien or whatever the case may be, that are coexisting in past parallel timelines, maybe they have a bit more insight about this than we do. I know that if my counterpart from a timeline alternate reality slightly behind mine, let's say I came across in an alternate reality my 10-year-old version of myself, right? Or no, I don't want to blow them out of the water. Let's say 15 or 16-year-old version of myself. Would I give myself advice? Big time. Because I don't want that person to make the same mistakes that I did. That really derailed me for a long period of time, chipped away at my self-worth, sent me reeling at times. So I know from a personal standpoint, I would want to help my counterpart, who would, from my perspective, be disadvantaged, growing up younger than me, in a hostile world, whether they realize it or not. And then there's the old argument, well, you're interfering with their free will. Well, they can take it on board. My counterpart can take it on board or not, right? It's that old conundrum. I think myself and some of my colleagues were in comms with particular ET groups in the past. And one of them told us something I thought was profound. The reason you have this proliferation of Hollywood movies saying that if you mess with the timeline in the slightest degree, you're going to frack everything up, right? And what they told us was, no, that's nonsense, because these negative ETs mess with time all the time, no pun intended. So I'm sure that if you really got out of control and went off the reservation and did something in an egregious manner, you can kind of muck things up. I understand that. But if, you know, working towards a plan, right, I think it's possible in our hypothesis, in our example, if one could help their counterpart in another timeline, another reality, and they take it on board and avoid the pitfalls that we had and made in our reality, what's to say, who's to say that another counterpart, more advanced than us, further along in their timeline, vis-a-vis our timeline, who's to say that they wouldn't be willing to help us? And because some of us have the ability, Logan, and I'm sure everyone on this panel has the ability at one time or another to go into alternate realities, I think that we can make some serious inroads into freeing us from this matrix. Because as we discussed earlier, the possibility exists these negative archontic forces in alternate realities are liaising with the negative archontic forces in our reality. Why wouldn't they? What's to stop them, right? So anyway, that was just my thoughts on it. Heaven, did you want to say something?
I had an experience, and I kind of need some help understanding it. It was an operation in my dreams. I got lost. Is that okay, Vasher? Okay, cool. I kind of got lost in the astralscape. So it was like Inception, and they used to, in Inception, they plug like these operatives, these intelligence agency operatives into like a dream. And they knew that the dream was a controlled state because they were dreaming within a dream. So I got trapped in a dream inside of a dream, and all dreams were extremely lucid, just like this reality. So I was in one dream, and it was like this three-storied mansion, and the doors were locked or whatever, and I'm inside the house, and they start sending operatives at me to attack me. And so I'm fighting for my life, and there's blood and all types of stuff, and I'm fighting these beings, and I have this waking moment, and I'm looking at, there's this woman sitting in the chair after I defeated these beings that were attacking me, and she like shapeshifted into like a real ugly creature, and she like lunged at me. And I ended up neutralizing her. And I was sitting there and I was standing and I realized that I was dreaming, but I was so lucid I couldn't discern it initially. And then I was able to wake up from that dream and I was in another dream. And I was like that deep in the rabbit hole, but I was in another part of that house. So closed my eyes. And I said, okay, I'm going to wake up now. And I woke up and I was laying down on a couch on the other side of that mansion. And boom, like clockwork, back again. Same beings are attacking me, and this time I start getting like enraged because I can't escape like this astral fucking detention. And excuse my language, I started shapeshifting into like a real tall, like 8 foot tall, like a whitish green reptilian type of being. Like my arms shapeshifted, and I had these supernatural abilities, and I just started mowing through the oppositional targets. And they started sending them my way, and I went on a rampage. And then eventually I was able to wake myself up from that dream, and I was in my room, and I texted James about it on Facebook. And I mean, it was a relatively traumatic experience. Not so much the combative nature of the dream, which I've had so many times, that's up my alley, but seeing myself in a state of anger and chaos, I shapeshifted into a reptilian being. And I've had similar experiences. I'm going to say this. I've had a lot of altercations in my life in real time. And I have like this Medusa thing to my eyes. So when I lock eyes with another man and we're in an altercation, I've frozen grown adult men in real time. I've froze, like they kind of get scared. And same thing, I have this thing to my eyes. So I'm not sure, maybe it's my eyes shape-shifting in this reality, and I'm able to, the Medusa folklore is real, and it's because I'm a hybrid, and we've spoke about this before. But yeah, that experience kind of freaked me out a little bit, being in that astral scape and shape-shifting into that being. And then, you know, I've always had that effect with my eyes in this reality. So I just any thoughts on that at all?
Those are key points, because in some of our other past parallel lives, we're not entirely human. But we could be aliens, we could be reptilians, whatever the case may be. And because of the morphic resonance field and this kind of ability at times to sync up with that aspect of ourselves, it would allow, I would think, some counterpart of yourself or part of your extended ET family to indwell within you at key moments, maybe even compel you to shapeshift. I believe some people have an innate ability to shapeshift, but sometimes it could be boosted if you have, like, lack of a better term, a familiar spirit or something along those lines, or an ET that overshadows you and then starts activating all these codons in your DNA, which, et cetera. We know that there is this holographic shape-shifting element within people because they have put people that were on heroin, drugged out on heroin, hypnotically put them into another altered state, another personality, and completely, immediately lost the effects of the heroin. And it's a conundrum. Why is that? Because the heroin should still be in the bloodstream. The heroin should still be in the brain, right? But it's not. Something happens which causes that person to have absolutely no symptoms or no sign whatsoever that they're on heroin. That's a conundrum. Mm-hmm. A quick question, and I throw it back to the panel in the time we got left. And thank you guys for coming on such short notice, and we'll definitely do this again. One time, I've talked about this before. Very quickly before I tell the story, the ability to go into alternate realities and a little ahead in the timeline in the astral dreamscape, everyone who has precognitive dreams, I feel, can do this. And it can be an aid because it can give us some insight into what may be coming down the pike in our timeline. Like, for example, I've seen from my perspective to be futuristic visions or scenes that I took part in of an extremely Orwellian, technocratic, a dystopian society, high-speed trains to haul people away off to the camps. You don't need windows and bars on the windows. You have electromagnetic fields to keep people hemmed into the trains and all this other stuff. And so I bring that out to point out that we can bring back intelligence from these other alternate realities and future timelines that may be of some benefit to us. And the experience I wanted to quickly relate, I've talked about this before. I won't go into minute detail, but I found myself in a humongous space station. And I was with a group of, like, ruffians. These guys were like space pirates. They were all disheveled. They were unkempt. They're people that I wouldn't associate with under any circumstances. I know it sounds like a value judgment because they look like bums. I'm not going to hang around with them. No, it's this negative vibe they gave off. So I'm in the space station in a place that reminds me of a food court, except there's no food outlets. And the place is teeming with people in a gigantic space station. Imagine Heathrow Airport times 100. That's what it seemed like to me. And then what happened was, working their way through the crowd was a column, a line of people headed in my direction. And I quickly realized that I was looking at the exact counterparts of the ruffians I was with. So the thought occurred to me, well, if I see their alternate reality or time travel counterparts, whatever, coming in my direction, it's possible my counterpart is with them, right? And that, to me, was a terrifying proposition. Here I am blowing smoke. I'd like to help my, my disadvantaged counterpart because I'm a big brother in a timeline sense. But, when it really happens to me, I get terrified. So what I did next, I think we all, or a lot of us, have the ability to do. As I saw this group coming towards me, exact counterparts to the ruffians I was with, hadn't seen my counterpart yet, but I wasn't going to stick around to find out. So I willed myself to bounce out of that reality. And it was almost like in those dreams where you just rapidly go from one setting, one environment, one place, if you will, rapid sequence, one after the other. And that's what happened. It was almost, if I can liken it to getting in an elevator and just like shooting up to all these different floors. And instead of stepping out of an elevator, you're already in some environment. And so I started bouncing from one reality to another. And on one occasion, and this happened very fast, I manifested in someone's bedroom, and some man just was aghast. You know, he's probably telling stories in his reality, you know, but about this weird looking guy who popped up in his bedroom. Well, that was me. And then he had this shock reaction. I kept bouncing. And after several bounces, I realized I was far enough from that space station in time and space terms that I was safe. Okay. Point of relevance is, if I can do that in a state of mind, a state of being where I was terrified, a state of extremis, if you will. And a lot of us have also manifested powers when we were in extreme danger and did things to morph reality on our own. It wasn't an angel that stepped in. I know that happens, but it was us utilizing these abilities, calling upon them subconsciously and morphing reality to the point where we escape by the skin of our teeth. So I just wanted to throw that out. So any final thoughts? We can go in for 2 hours and 13 minutes here. Any final thoughts? Each member of our panel, Logan, you want to start?
Geez. I mean, tip of the iceberg, I think, you know, what we've touched on now. And I would agree, you know, if we were to do this again, I'd definitely be up for it. Yeah, like we are able to do more than we're told. You know, we are, you know, capable. You know, more capable, and they just don't want us to believe that, you know, and that's every little sense, every little piece of fearful thing they put out, every little movie we watch, you know, and at the end of the day, even when Nathan was saying, and, you know, we have said in our own way, you know, what are we motivated by? You know, what are our actions guided by? Fear? You know, are we, you know, like, how does it feel? You know, like even War in Heaven hinted at it. He said as well, you know, how it feels. Exactly. How do some of our actions feel to us? You know, does it sit right? Does it really have us quite scared? You know, is it something that, you know, and that's probably the red flag straight away. You know, if it is that, you know, if it has us feeling like there's no way out, we're not able, you know, there's, you know, exactly that, all this sort of stuff that, you know, we won't find the, you know, source reality, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever little thing just has us thinking that we're not going to make it, probably isn't the right direction. And I'd probably just end off just by saying that, you know, once we sort of see for ourselves that we are more capable than we realize, you know, then a lot gets easier and we don't have to fall for as much of what they're putting in front of our faces all the time.
Heaven, you want to have some final words for this time around?
I'd like to say that I believe that our, and this is my theory, our mind is the most powerful, one of the most powerful technologies in this universe. And as far as, you know, wave particle duality is concerned, you can control and manipulate the wave function collapse, meaning that you can control particles to form and collapse as you wish. And this is theoretical in nature. Being able to manipulate reality inherent with your mind and creating the best possible list of potentials or outcomes for yourself is inherently possible and inherently in your grasp. To not leave everyone on a negative note, like I said, your mind is extremely powerful, one of the most powerful technologies in this universe, and I believe that you can manipulate reality to play out as you wish. And I think the entire struggle and the entire battle is the getting in the way of that and manifesting what they choose on the grid of your consciousness, opposed to you manifesting what you will on the grid of your consciousness. And you have
Nathan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we're in a perceptual prison that's powered by engineered consent. And from what I've experienced, from everything that's happened to me, it's based in your perception of yourself and what your capabilities are, and they work to diminish them. You're told as a child that you have to conform, that everything the adults are doing are correct and don't question. Then you get a little bit older and you realize Santa's not real and a few other things, and they've lied to you, and you just start to reality test, and you realize that as you go along that everyone's telling you can't do something, you can't change things. When you see that it's wrong, you can't do it. It's reinforced in such a simple way as that. But when you get into the spiritual end of it, And you study near-death experiences, and then you have experiences of yourself, and then you network with people, what you find is that This is a prison with no bars because it doesn't need them. All it needs is your perception. If you perceive it as being a prison that you can't get out of, you're not going to get out of it. If you perceive that these handlers are all powerful and can have total control, you're going to give your power up to them. My biggest lesson after almost 51 years of dealing with this is that, you know, they say the devil's a liar, right? And I always used to question why or how, what is he lying about? Well, it's just it's just kind of a metaphor for our situation. If you want to believe the lies, you give up all of your power. Mm-hmm. And the lie is essentially you can't do anything. You don't have the ability. Even if you got with other people, it wouldn't work, you know. But everything I've experienced, it really comes down to one thing. And you know, it's a friend of yours that helped me too. And I've got other wonderful people around me. But your friend, Pat Jackson, for example, one of the things that she told me, James, is, you know, right away, is that you're giving your power away. It's how you perceive this. I'm like, there's a reincarnation trap. They're going to get us. And she's like, you know, I've been in it and I've left it. You know, if you give your power away, they're going to take you. You're going to be trapped. Another good example is the MyLab situation. What do they do when we die? I've been trying to get to the answer to this. And I talked to Pat Jackson as one example and others, a few people that I know. And then I started to have the connection with my altar, who apparently, according to him, has full memory recall of my our complete existence, you know. And when I say our, I mean him and I and every one of my parts. And then so I'm integrating there and I'm learning things from that. And essentially what he said to me, because I thought that they were going to kill me at 55. Once I broke free from the mind control, he told me, he says, only if you let them. Of course, somebody could shoot me. I could have an accident. Something unforeseen could just happen. I could do it to myself, you know, but it's only, I mean, they're only going to be able to do is they're only going to be able to stop me if I let them. Mm-hmm. And if I fear that they're going to stop me, of course, I'm going to stop myself. So I don't know if I have a final thought here. It's just that, you know, you have to stop listening to the naysayers, especially the V2K, because there's no greater naysayer than them. They're in your head constantly and they're telling you have no power. You just better conform. And the message that I always got was, it's better if you just go along with it. Stop fighting the system. Mm-hmm. And that was the overall message. And I never listened to it. But I didn't realize just how I was actually giving in until I really got an education in all of this, which is, you know, it's like those dependent thought patterns. You have to eliminate them. But I think really the key to remembering things and getting, I mean, for us, at least my labs, is integration. And that is a very, very difficult thing to do, because not only is it extremely painful and complex and hard to establish, but it requires that you break away in the first place. You have to change the way you think and act. And you have to see yourself as more powerful than your enemy. And you have to overcome it through that perception of yourself. So, you know, for me, learning that and then getting access to these other parts of myself was really key to getting where I'm at now, which then, of course, gives me the responsibility to help other people. Also, too, like another thing I've done throughout the course of my life is when it made me sick, I tried to use that to expand my emotional span, you know, to open it up, to have more compassion for people. Because looking at myself being in that situation, I realized right away that people didn't really have compassion for me. You know, you expect it from doctors. You're not always going to get it. You usually don't, especially nowadays. But just, you know, people who say they love you literally don't have compassion for you in a lot of cases. And, you know, I realized that and I didn't want to be like them. So I worked on myself, and through working on myself, I found myself. And I think I have a good idea what I need to do now as far as the rest of my life is concerned. But and it's a pretty simple thing. It's working in this community and reminding people that it's important to care about each other, that unity is absolutely the most important thing, and it has to be out of love. So more or less, love's the most important thing, and then unity comes after that. That's what I have to do. And I think that is key to turning this around, because we have a generation of people coming up that are here. These are, you know, they're either recycled MyLabs or we call them star seeds. They're coming here from elsewhere to be agents of change, and they're being targeted by the system. They're already becoming TIs in my lab. So essentially what I feel is my purpose now is to be there to help them so that they can be the agents of change that we need. And in hope that everything else that's taking place that I can sense now, finally, that there is something, there is a power out there, there's an authority that's turning this world around. But we don't always see the fruits of that labor right in front of us. We have to learn how to see them and not get discouraged when we don't and continue to push forward. So that's what I'm trying to say. And I'm getting emotional, too. I was actually getting emotional earlier because some of the subject matter is difficult to deal with.
I mean, you know, to follow that point, you know, and what Heaven and what Logan talked about also, we have within us a tremendous reservoir of love. And I talked about my little tour guide. Some of you probably heard me tell the story. Bears repeating very quickly. Throughout my childhood years and going into my high school years, I would say, it stopped when I was a sophomore, 10th grade in high school. I always had this little guy next to me, and he would show me things. He would take me to other dimensions, other realms, and look at this, look at that. I never saw him straight on. He was always by my side, always in my periphery. And he would, you know, convey all this information of a highly spiritual nature. And then one fine day or night, when I was dreaming about him, we were in what I perceived to be my backyard in our home at the time in San Jose, California. And there was a group of kids all clustered together. They had their arms overhead and they were swaying in unison, their arms. And they were going, om, om, something like that. And then I asked my little tour guide, like, what are they doing, right? In my backyard. So for the one and only time I ever saw a little tour guide, he got in front of me. He grasped both of my wrists and pushed my palms together in an attitude of prayer in front of my heart center. And all I can say was I felt this explosion of nirvana, of love, agape love, call it what you will. And I was just catapulted into the air. The air was suffused with hues of amber and peach and gold, right? And I was in a state of nirvana. And the long and the short of it was I never saw my little tour guide again. It's like he made his point. And then with me the next morning, Mr. Spock trying to elbow his way into the equation again, I'm trying to figure out, well, I didn't realize I had such power in my chest area. I wonder what that means. I didn't know anything about chakras or a heart center at the time. But with the benefit of hindsight, it was an object lesson of the power that we have within us from a heart-centered perspective. So I'll leave everyone with that thought. To our panel members, please leave your browsers up for a little while to allow this to be uploaded for archiving purposes. But just go ahead. If it's not too much trouble, if you can't do it, it's impractical on your phone or whatever, that's fine. We should have enough here from the other members to save all of it. But just mute your mics and just turn off your cameras and then just check the browser later when it says uploaded, and then you can go ahead and close the browser. Right. I just don't want this historical record to disappear. To our dear listeners and members out there, thank you so much. Thank you so much for all the support and encouragement you've given us over the years. And we are all in this together. This is the unity that Nathan was talking about. And stay tuned because we're going to have these chats, more of them going forward in the future. So thank you very much, all of you on the panel, for participating, and thank all of you that tuned in. Bye for now.